You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, we have Jeffrey S. Yablond, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Asia Pacific for the US-based Clinical Contract Research Organization, InClinica. InClinica and IC Life Sciences in Drembrahad, they've launched their Asia Pacific office in KL recently in targeting rapid development of clinical research studies in the Asia Pacific region. So we welcome to the show, Jeffrey. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you for having me.
So for those not in the medical community, in the research community, could you perhaps start by explaining a little bit about clinical contract research organizations, or CROs, and what essentially it does?
What we do is we support the pharmaceutical industry in the development of new novel drugs and medical devices and therapies. It's important to note that to bring a new drug to market costs almost $1 billion on average from the time the molecule is discovered until it launches commercially in various countries. What the CROs do, contract research organizations, is support the pharmaceutical industry by doing a number of tasks for them. We run the clinical trials. We will manage their data. We will do statistical analysis, medical writing, and a whole host of other services in the administration of clinical research. And InClinica plays a role in doing that on a global basis, supporting clients both in Asia, Europe, and North America in the development and support of their drugs. Now, not every drug does get approved, so we do our very best to give the data necessary to allow regulators to decide if they're safe and if they work.
So, until very recently, Jeffrey, I have to admit to you that I didn't realize that there was a space in the medical industry, in the healthcare industry, for CROs. I always assumed that pharmaceutical companies ran their own clinical tests and research. So why is it that pharmaceutical companies need to outsource this to CROs?
Well, 2 points. One is the CRO industry is now a $20-plus billion industry growing at a compounded annual growth rate of 5 to 7% per year. And the reason they outsource it is there's a lot of variability in terms of staffing and need. So to offset the staffing requirements to have everybody in-house, they found it to be more cost-effective and efficient to outsource it to a third party like InClinica to do the support and administrative services in running the clinical trials.
So how comprehensive is this service? Are we talking about everything under one roof for a CRO? So the day the pharmaceutical company comes to you and say, we have this new drug that we want you to run clinical research on, does that go all the way to getting regulatory approval, et cetera, and dealing with everything from academia to regulators?
It certainly can. Different organizations have different breadth of service. Others are niche players that really focus on just one element of it. InClinica works with a pharmaceutical company from preclinical, that's before the drug is tested in man, to do a lot of the laboratory analysis, all the way to post-approval to do additional analysis of a drug that has been approved, but regulators require additional scrutiny to ensure that as the drug goes into a larger patient population, it continues to be safe and it works well.
So for CROs, does scale matter? Is it the bigger you are, the more service you can offer, the more efficient you can be?
For the major multinational corporations, there is that perception at times. Other organizations like mine that does have a global footprint but is smaller in scope than some of the majors, we make up for it by having a key support network of highly trained clinical experts. We're known, and we've trademarked the name, the Cerebral CRO. We use the best and brightest talent we can find to shepherd our clients. And that becomes very interesting for Asia because a number of Asian companies are desirous of bringing their pharmaceutical products to the West.
Well, give us a bit of the lay of the land for the CRO business. How fragmented is this industry? Are we talking about a few big players here that have almost equal market share, or lots of small players in a very fragmented market?
You'll see the top five players, and to name a few of them, INC Research, Parexel, Icon, Covance, and Quintiles, to manage in excess of 60% of the market. And then the rest of the market has probably in excess of 500 additional companies working in regional capacities, in niche capacities. Some just manage data, some just manage laboratory services, some have a greater breadth of service. The whole idea in clinical research, though, is to develop a clean, combinable data set that a regulatory agency can determine if the drug is safe and efficacious. So at InClinica, we try to provide as much service as possible across that continuum from preclinical to post-approval and the regulatory and operational support in between.
Okay. And again, are there synergies because you have multiple offices around the world? So does it help to have a global network?
It's absolutely necessary because to run a clinical trial, often you need to do it in multiple countries, 10, 20, 30 different countries. Oh. So coordination of your activities between North America, Europe, and Asia is critical to the success of that project, and also having personnel in the various countries that can work with the individual country to work with the investigators, the patients, the regulators to get the trial approved and properly executed.
So InClinica, in fact, only came into being earlier this year, if I'm not mistaken. Was it August, where Velocity Fund Partners, which is a Pittsburgh-based private equity company, bought over IndyPharm, and lo and behold, relaunched it as InClinica. Now, the question is, and this is relating to my earlier question about whether this market is fragmented, is it something we'll see in the CRO industry, the landscape? More consolidation, private equity coming over and rebranding, relaunching CROs?
Historically, that's been the way forward. CROs have gotten scale through acquisition. Organic growth is difficult because we're very people dependent. So you can only grow so much in any given year by hiring people. So to get footprint, to get geographical reach, operational reach, acquisition is the way to do this. We are the first acquisition in IndyPharm being acquired by Velocity, hence InClinica Inc. We're the first acquisition. We've also created a sister company focused on life science distribution called IC Life Sciences. That does everything from providing laboratory services to the importation of the number one physician supervised dietary program into Malaysia to a whole host of medical devices and other things. So it's a very exciting, dynamic field we're in.
I'm really interested to pursue what you just brought up about talent, because that seems to be the lifeline of this industry. But let's touch on that a little bit later. Coming back to what you're doing here in Malaysia today, now let's talk a little bit about why you chose Malaysia to be your hub, because you've got offices everywhere from the UK, Israel, Australia, Greece, and now Malaysia. You've been here for a while, but now
yes.
It was a representative office, and now you're making it a hub. So why Malaysia?
Years ago, under IndyPharm, we had a project here, and allowed us to get to know key people in Malaysian government and NGOs and understand the landscape here. When it came time to lift and shift our operation from India, we looked in ASEAN. We found Singapore to be more expensive than the United States. We came to Malaysia exploring what might be the opportunities, and we were welcomed with open arms. The Malaysia Biotechnology Corporation, MITA, Permandu, and a whole host of others really saw the benefit of what we were going to bring to the table. And part of what we bring to the table is not just running a business here, but we feel very passionately about the need for education and focusing on worker readiness. We work with the International Medical University to develop a training curricula that focuses on practical clinical trial management. I don't care if I'm training my people or my competitors' people. If you raise the level of water in a glass, everything rises with it. Training is the most important thing we can bring to Malaysia as we move Malaysia from a commodity-based economy to a technology-based economy. Knowledge workers is what this is all about. And I'm passionate as an educator to do as much as I can to help and assist young talent grow and meet their objectives in this industry.
Is that how you see yourself as an educator?
I have been. I've been educating at the university level for a number of years. Here I've been fortunate to lecture at IMU, UITM Mara, and Masa University. So it's critically important, and I believe it's the lifeblood of this industry succeeding.
You mentioned that it was when it was time to leave India, you looked at Malaysia. Why opt out of being in the Indian market?
About 5-6 years ago, there were issues with non-governmental organizations being very concerned about how patients were compensated in the event of adverse events. It resulted in the clinical trial market in terms of new clinical trials shutting down for a number of years. It's since reversed itself, but the damage was done. So we saw decreasing, if zero, opportunity in India and thought best to be more centrally located in ASEAN where you can have a more pan-Asian focus.
So this was a change in government regulation and that impacted the CRO business?
That country.
Are you concerned about similar changes in regulation happening in Malaysia? Because again, you know, the cost of unwinding a business in a country is massive.
Actually, quite the opposite is true. Malaysia firmly understands that there needs to be an ecosystem that runs from first-in-man trials all the way through post-approval trials. Currently, there is a guidelines committee that's being fostered by Clinical Research Malaysia and a team headed by Tantri Abubakar bin Suleiman from IMU, who is developing with the Malaysian FDA a series of guidelines that will allow first-in-man trials to begin sometime next year. So if anything else, they are putting further emphasis. It's also an EPP2 objective to increase the number of clinical trials in Malaysia to over 1,000 by year 2020.
What's the multiplier effect, Jeffrey? I mean, why is there so much emphasis on growing this industry in Malaysia? Can you explain a little bit about what the multiplier effect can be?
Clearly, it's jobs and revenue, and not only organizations like InClinica benefit. We're also working with a lab in Malacca called Malacca MBSL, and we're creating an environment to do laboratory analysis. We're creating an environment to hire other professionals from other companies to do support services that we can't do in the area of translation, medical writing. The multiplier effect, first and foremost, is jobs for Malaysia and jobs for Malaysians.
It's high-value jobs as well, I might add.
Clearly, knowledge workers.
I'm speaking to Jeffrey S. Yablon, Executive Vice President and General Manager for Asia Pac for InClinica. After this, we dive a little deeper into the challenges of the CRO industry. Stay tuned to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9. Good morning. Today on The Breakfast Grill with me is Jeffrey S. Yablon, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Asia Pacific for the Clinical Contract Research Organization InClinica. So we're talking a little bit about the move to choose Malaysia as a regional hub. Now, I'm wondering, there's been a shift of companies, CROs, looking at Asia Pacific as a cost-effective research and development hub. Is InClinica a little late to the game now that you're trying to position yourself here in this market?
I think the window is wide open, and I'm perfectly positioned to grow and expand this business very rapidly. We're at the right place at the right time. Being in Malaysia allows us to take advantage of the cost arbitrage, allows us to get highly qualified personnel at good prices, and allows us to compete on a global basis and provide the highest quality in terms of standards and services of anywhere in the world.
Jeffrey, you were talking to me a little earlier about treatment naive. Could you explain how that comes into play when you're thinking about moving to new markets?
A clear example of that is in the area of diabetes. There are over 50 different diabetes drugs that are looking to enter the market, and each one, as we talked about earlier, requires a clinical trial. In the U.S. and in Europe, you have competition for the same investigators to get to the same patients times 50. Here in Southeast Asia, China, India, there's a greater opportunity working with investigators to find patients who have yet to be treated and yet to be on other clinical trials that we can enroll. So it really becomes an efficiency play to get the right patients at the right time at the right place.
And you also mentioned earlier that medical breakthroughs don't happen. Not every drug gets approved even after clinical trials. So what kind of ratio are we talking about when it comes to, you know, preclinical trials and getting that approval.
Your listeners may be shocked to hear this, but only 1 in 10,000 compounds discovered actually makes it to market.
Wow.
Out of 30,000 compounds, only 8 ever show a positive return on investment. The stakes are very, very high.
Why are the rates so low? I mean, why so few make it through?
Safety and efficacy defined by the ability of the drug to work, are of paramount importance. Mm-hmm. And we've had numerous examples in the past where drugs have been brought to market without the necessary scrutiny. Speaking for an example, back in the 60s, a drug called thalidomide, which was used for pregnant mothers to alleviate morning sickness, caused tremendous birth defects in babies. And that basically occurred because we didn't do the analysis necessary to find out what the impact would be on the unborn fetus. Mm-hmm. Ensuring that patients are safe and that drugs work is the most important thing we can do. And as a result, not everything that is discovered can possibly make it to market.
But does that impact CRO business? I mean, essentially, your business model isn't dependent on what drugs make it to market, right?
That's correct. Okay. My job is to make sure that we are doing everything possible to give regulatory authorities the data set they need to analyze if that drug is safe and if it works.
And you've been in the life sciences management industry for many years, for 2 decades now, if I'm not mistaken.
And more than that.
More than that, okay.
Yes.
Well, how have you seen that change? Because when you talk to me about the pie growing and how this business, this industry is continually growing every year, what is the driver of that growth? Are we talking about innovation, advances in technology, medical breakthroughs? What's driving the growth of this business?
Unfortunately, as population increases, a percentage of our populations continue to become ill or suffer from various maladies. Our objective and the objective of medical science is to alleviate suffering, is to cure disease. There are ample opportunities to improve on existing therapies and ample opportunities to find new therapies to alleviate various conditions. As we age, we tend to be on more medication and have more illness. Unfortunately, we benefit from that, but at the same time, the pharmaceutical industry and the drugs it creates have the net beneficial effect of reducing hospital stay, of increasing lifespan, and reducing other issues associated with both chronic and acute disease states. So it's nothing but a result of the current state of the world.
Which is not going to change anytime soon. So again,
no.
I think this is a recession-proof business, Jeffrey?
It has proved to be thus far. What we are seeing is potentially what they call the era of the blockbuster drug being over. Mm-hmm. Those are drugs defined as having the revenue potential of $1 billion per year or more. We're focusing more on products that meet the needs of niche markets, that focus on personalized medicine, drugs that get to the right patient at the right time, and clearly looking at the differences between a young Asian woman versus a middle-aged Caucasian man and providing drugs and therapies that meet the specific needs rather than saying one size fits all.
Can you do that? How would you customize a drug that way? I take it data, just ridiculous amounts of research and data.
You know, one of the benefits of understanding the human genome is the ability to understand what impacts a particular population. We look at things called single nucleotide polymorphisms, which are the genetic aberrations that are in each and every one of us. You know, we think that as human beings, our genomic code should all be the same.
Yes.
But we're all unique and we're all different.
Sure, that's what our parents tell us.
Absolutely. And in this particular case, it's true. So what we're able to do is develop pharmaceuticals that meet a more specific population. The economic issue associated with that is it reduces the total available market in terms of sales.
Right.
But we're doing the right thing by getting the right drug to the right patient at the right time that allows us to have the right anticipated outcome.
Is there ever that conflict between, you know, commercial considerations versus this is for the good of mankind?
Well, from my side, no. That would be something you'd have to take up with the pharmaceutical manufacturer in terms of...
Do you ever feel that conflict of interest in your line of duty?
I do not. I'm pure in that regard. My job is to provide service and support and information that allows people to make qualified decisions about the current and future state of whether or not to advance their clinical program.
So what would be the biggest challenge, would you say, that being in the CRO industry at the moment, what is that biggest challenge?
Well, from my perspective as a service provider, clearly it's working with clients who have limited funds and making sure, or at least assisting them in getting their projects done with funding constraints. As I said earlier, it's a very, very expensive proposition. So much of the economics are tied to milestones, and many of the smaller companies only have one product, and if that product doesn't succeed, the company's defunct.
So are you, at the moment, is Inclinica working on anything that is showing some promise?
We work on a whole number of things. Much of the information is proprietary because of our client's request, but we work in a whole host of therapeutic areas from cancer, asthma, dermatology, and major therapeutic areas. When you look at where new pharmaceuticals are coming about, they're really clustered in four key areas, which is oncology, cardiovascular, infectious disease, and autoimmune conditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where the pharmaceutical company is putting their money, because that's where people are seeing the greatest prevalence of those diseases.
But there are other diseases that would probably benefit from more clinical research, you reckon?
Clearly, there are orphan diseases that affect a very, very limited number of people that there are ongoing clinical trials against, mm-hmm. but there are also those that just can't get funding because the patient population isn't great enough. What offsets that, or what has offset that in the past, is government grants and government supports and government-sponsored research. But we also see a shrinking pool in that area as well. So there are going to be trade-offs against the economics and doing what is in, you know, the best altruistic vein of good medicine.
Well, speaking about regulation and government help in this area, you operate in so many different countries. There are, I'm sure, many levels of regulatory approvals that you have to go through, especially with all these different countries. Is that logistically a nightmare for you?
It's not a nightmare, but it requires a deft hand. You really have to understand the nuances. Most countries subscribe in one way or another to the guidance supplied by the American FDA.
Is it standardized?
No, not at all.
It's not standardized, but it's just a guideline by the FDA.
FDA and European Medicines Agency serve as the gold standards, but each country has regulations that are maybe more stringent and additional to the FDA or EMA guidelines, or they have specific guidance. Malaysia, for example, very much subscribes to portions of FDA, but their leadership also wants to ensure that Malaysians impacted by these drugs are safe, specific to Malaysians, and want to make sure that there is additional scrutiny of the drug before it's released in this country, okay, in addition to anything that the FDA might have done.
So what's the plan now, Jeffrey, that you're here in Malaysia? What's the next milestone for Inclinica?
We are very, very excited. We are a rapidly growing organization. To see where we came from as a single-person representative office 4 years ago to having a new headquarters in downtown KL and adding people at a very rapid rate in all disciplines, from clinical operations to data management to managerial services, et cetera, and our staff in other countries supporting our endeavors, we see nothing in this market. And when you hear about businesses shrinking and maybe leaving Malaysia, we've doubled down. We believe Malaysia is a great place to do business. We are very grateful for the governmental support that we've received. I'm a raving fan of the country, and I look to be here for many more years to come. And as we say in Malaysia, Malaysia boleh.
I've been speaking to Jeffrey S. Yablon, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Asia Pacific for InClinica. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Melissa Idris for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.